now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, previewing Michigan's road trip at Nebraska. There'll be lots of preview stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com to come in the next couple days. Myself and Josh Newkirk will be live on the scene in Lincoln, providing you updates at the exact same website. And we'll have a post-game podcast episode as well. Given it's a night game, probably Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. But regardless, this episode, we're going to look at keys to the game, some other storylines from this week in practice. We'll do our over-under predictions, and then our final thoughts on this matchup. So, Steve, just to get things started, I have to think the biggest key to this game in terms of a strength of Nebraska that Michigan must be mindful of is Adrian Martinez. Very, very experienced and very talented quarterback. I mean, he was the starter when they played 3 years ago in 2018. I think that was actually his first road start even. But anyway, he's still starting. Great dual threat guy. And what stands out to me about him is I think he can decide at any time he wants to run and it will work. There are some dual threat quarterbacks or mobile quarterbacks who, it's kind of got to be a designed situation. He's someone, in my opinion, you can't ever take the spy off him in the sense of, like, even if the play looks like it's going to be one, he can change his mind on a second's notice. So, Steve, we haven't really seen Michigan face a true mobile quarterback, at least in my opinion, so far this season. I mean, guys like Mertz and Washington's quarterback, whose name escapes me, but, they were kind of middle infielder athletic. I mean, they could shuffle around, move out of the pocket, but Adrian Martinez is a different beast. What have you seen from him so far this season? And how well do you feel Michigan's defense is equipped at kind of stopping him or limiting what he can do?
It's definitely going to be a test for that ability to slow down the big play defensively, right? Martinez, just looking at him statistically, is a lot of all or nothing, it kind of feels like. 75-yard touchdown run. He's their leading rusher. Obviously, their leading passer. But also, he's been sacked 18 times this season, which is quite a bit. But he is, I mean, you talk about cutting the head off of the dragon. This is a classic case of that. Whether he was a dual threat guy or not, I mean, this is just a classic case of he's by far their best player. He has the experience that you mentioned before. The other thing, too, I go back to the intangibles type deal. Nebraska needs a signature win under Scott Frost, and I think Martinez needs a signature game to really kind of maybe win back the fan base. Beating Northwestern, Buffalo, and Fordham, as well as they've played, all three of their losses are within a touchdown. 2-point conversion against – they lost by 8 against Illinois, but point stands. So – yeah, I think Martinez goes, Nebraska goes. I think their receiving core is a little bit more healthy heading into this game. But he's a guy, I feel like if you slow him down in the running game, I do think, again, he's played out of his mind all year. But this does feel like another game that Aiden Hutchinson can kind of put his stamp on. Because if Michigan can limit Martinez in the running game, I think he's capable of making a couple mistakes in the pass if Michigan can get the right kind of pressure on him.
Yeah, he also has 6 fumbles this year, which I don't mean to suggest. Well, actually, I guess 6 is a lot. He had 2 against Illinois that were pretty costly, 2 at Michigan State that were pretty costly. And so that's another thing. But he is averaging 4.81 yards after contact per attempt. That's according to Pro Football Focus. I assume that means runs that weren't sacks. I assume that's sack adjusted, but Yeah, he's someone that can really I mean, yeah, he can make you pay. And I agree, the big play capability is probably what makes him the most dangerous. I'm really curious to see how the linebackers hold up, because I think that group has quietly played, maybe not too quietly, but I think that's as good as a linebacker core since the 2018 season, in my personal opinion. And I mean, Nakai Hill-Green, I think before he played this season, I think the reputation around him was that he was kind of maybe a Mike McCray type, where he's big, he tackles hard, great against the run, but kind of unknown as someone who needs to move around in space. And you know, George Hela was just talking about today, shed 15 pounds this offseason, which is not easy for a rising redshirt freshman to necessarily do, you know, let alone one who was already a Big Ten football player. Like, his body was already perceived as good enough to make an impact, but he continued his progress there. So, you know, I think he's a lot faster. Josh Ross, I don't know what his 40 time was before. I don't know what it is now. He just straight up looks faster. And I think Daxton Hill really helps with this. I know he's not a linebacker, but he's someone that I think could play a really big role in shutting down Martinez in a way other teams maybe haven't necessarily been able to, in that he can, I mean, he obviously has to do his coverage duties, but when he's getting after the quarterback, Adrian Martinez is not outrunning Daxton Hill. And Hill is gradually getting better at understanding, you know, when he blitzes, where he needs to go, how to not over pursue. Because that will be one thing. You mentioned Hutchinson. I think if there was a critique on Aiden Hutchinson's game entering this season, it was that he could over pursue at times. And that would cost him a sack versus a quarterback pressure. Feels like he's gotten better at it. This game will test that. But yeah, I think the big thing for me will be just seeing how the linebackers, how disciplined they are, you know, how consistent they are. Cause you mentioned the all or nothing. That's seen as a negative in a lot of cases, but sometimes that's a positive for a team. You know, like, all or nothing means like all it takes is one mistake and he's off. And Martinez has 17 broken tackles this season on 42 carries. That's very good. I mean, that's not just elite for a quarterback. That's pretty darn good for a running back as well. So that will be a big thing. Any other keys, Steve, for Michigan's defense in this matchup? I mean, I'd kind of venture to say this is probably the best offense Michigan has faced all season, even with some of the fumbles and the inconsistencies. Any other keys for you for Michigan's defense?
I agree, I think this is the best offense they face, but I also think this is another offensive line that they can get pressure. They can create havoc on the inside, right? That's I think. So obviously two things I suspect Nebraska is going to do: try to run Martinez consistently, and then also probably some quick strike type stuff to try to negate that pressure. So be interesting to see how McDonald attacks that. But if there's any drop back or any extended play stuff, I think Michigan has an opportunity to really make some big plays. So, but yeah, one guy I watch, I remember when he was being recruited, I think he's their second or third leading receiver. One guy I'm kind of watching might challenge Michigan secondary is Omar Manning. Is a guy little bigger, gives them a little bit something different than I don't think they've really seen on the outside yet this year. So could be a guy that Martinez will target, you know, because really you think about it, all the talk about Aiden Hutchinson, Josh Ross, even Daxton Hill, we really, and this is a good thing, haven't really heard Michigan's corners, their names much at all the last couple of weeks. And, you know, that's one of those things. It's a good thing, but it also can be a thing where you want these guys to be challenged every once in a while, so they stay fresh and locked in. So that this week, I think that'll happen. It'll be a big test for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually, as someone who gets to see the coverage stats every week, I actually think Vincent Gray is having a very strong season. And Jamon Green, it seems like in the first quarter of every game, he gives up one medium to big completion, and then he's like good the rest of the game. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, this Nebraska pass rush, or pass protection, I should say, has allowed 94 quarterback pressures in 6 games. And that includes a couple, I guess you would call them gimme games. You know, they played Fordham. Northwestern does not have much of a pass rush this season. I think that they're comfortably the worst team in the Big Ten right now. And yeah, it's just not a good, I mean, they're according to Pro Football Focus, their pass blocking is worse. It's the only one in the Big Ten that's worse than Wisconsin's has been so far. And they've played a weaker schedule than Wisconsin has so far. And we saw Michigan, 6 sacks, 29 quarterback pressures in 29 passing snaps against the Badgers. So I think this is a game where Michigan can really, granted, Martinez can escape sacks, so pressures don't necessarily mean everything, but I think this is a game where they can really, really kind of put their foot down, put their foot on the gas, and just create some momentum changing plays just by their ability to get by the offensive line. Yeah. So for me, if there was a player in addition to the linebackers that I'm keeping an eye on, let's see if David Ojabo can do it 2 weeks in a row. I mean, he looked like someone who's going to be drafted last week against Wisconsin. 2.5 sacks, 6 quarterback pressures, 6 run stops, 7 tackles, a forced fumble. If he plays like that on Saturday, I don't know how many times Nebraska is going to be able to string together an entire drive. Yeah, you bring up a good point about the receivers as well. You know, they've got talent. I mean, this isn't a team that, you know, they're kind of, I think they're top 25 in the team talent composite. They've had some departures in the receiving game, but yeah, Omar Manning, to your point, he has been targeted 12 times this season. He has 12 catches for 176 yards. So it's literally 14.7 yards per attempt in his direction. I don't believe he has a drop yet this season. Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating game. I do like where Michigan's cornerbacks are at. I think, as you said, we're not hearing about them a lot because teams just aren't really able to throw in that direction. Martinez will certainly try it more than Wisconsin or Washington or Rutgers will. But yeah, this will be an interesting test for them. Key for Michigan's offense. I'm not particularly blown away by Nebraska's defense, but any particular key that you see for the Wolverines in this matchup?
I think a lot of it is just kind of keep doing what you're doing, honestly. Nebraska not generating a lot of pressure, not generating a lot of sacks. They're solid against the run. But yeah, I agree with you. There's nothing about them that really blows me away. I would say Wisconsin has a better defense than Nebraska does, right? I mean, probably by, at least statistically, by a semi-fair margin. But I think it's more keep doing what they're doing. You know, we talked about last week, 2 big things that Michigan's done that can really be a big asset for them going forward is they've limited the big plays on off defense, and McNamara has shown an ability to make big plays throwing the ball down the field. Feel like Michigan's offensive line should be able to give him time to do that again. You know, that's one thing that I feel like, you know, Michigan, I also think they'll be able to run the football maybe as equal they did against Wisconsin, if not a little bit better. So if I'm Michigan, really, it's sort of, if it's not broke, don't fix it type of deal here. It's to me, I think offensively, and again, with McNamara, I think it's going to be managing the hostile atmosphere. I think it's going to be getting off to a good, solid start. And it's going to, you know, continue. It's inevitable Michigan's going to turn the ball over at some point this season. They're not going to go a whole season without turning the ball over. If Saturday is a game where they turn the ball over, to me, avoid doing it early in the game. Don't give Nebraska anything to build off of or any kind of footing to start the game off that might make this game tougher than it would have been otherwise. So, you know, for Michigan, I think, yeah, revolve your offense around the run and use it to set up the pass, you know, and I think Michigan should be able to do that if they keep doing what they've been doing all season.
Yeah, I think I think the big thing will just be dominate the trenches in the run game. Because I think that's how Nebraska loses any sort of mojo it has built. I do think it's kind of similar to the receivers. Like they quietly do have a talented pass rushing defensive front. I think in third and long situations, I do think they're able to pin their ears back and make some plays. And their secondary is good. I don't know where it would rank in the Big Ten, but it definitely in the top half in terms of coverage, especially. So I think Michigan can complete passes on Nebraska. I don't think it's going to be, doesn't feel like it's going to be like a Washington situation. I don't think their secondary is quite as good as Rutgers is, but I think Michigan really can do itself a lot of favors if it can be in more third and four instead of third and nine. So I think being able to dominate the run game, because that probably is the one area you and I talked about this last week. Even if you're looking at Nebraska, okay, they've got a few intriguing players, they've got some things that they can do well, but Michigan on paper should dominate them in the trenches. This is not, I'm going to poke the bear a little bit here. This is not going to be a Scott Frost press conference where if Michigan does its job, he's not going to be able to say Nebraska outhit Michigan in this game. And you know, he famously said that after UCF lost by like 40 plus to Michigan in 2016. Doesn't feel like that. I mean, they Michigan's offensive line versus Nebraska's defensive line in the run game, not a particularly close matchup. And Michigan should be able to do well there. And then the other thing, I think something that's kind of fascinating me rewatching this Wisconsin game, really think Cade McNamara. I mean, I don't know how many, I don't know if there's a way to measure this, but the way he's able to avoid sacks and still keep a play alive for not even being a particularly mobile or speedy quarterback is really impressive. And Michigan's running backs, we've talked about their fall forward rate all the time. That's where I think, you know, your whole point of doing what you're doing, their ability to avoid negative plays has been such a tremendous help to the offense and just making sure that the life doesn't get sucked out of what they can do. No turnovers helps too, but as you mentioned, you can't necessarily go into a game saying, oh yeah, they're not going to turn the ball over today. But you can kind of count on Michigan avoiding those negative plays. Steve, any other either storylines or things you're keeping an eye on? I know it's going to be a night game. Michigan's first trip to Nebraska since 2012. Just their third trip ever. I think they visited in 1911 as well. But, you know, so it'll be a big atmosphere. You mentioned Nebraska is kind of desperate for this game. This was initially your trap game. I think, I don't think it necessarily counts as too much of a trap game anymore, but anything else on your mind in terms of a key for Michigan heading into this matchup?
No, nothing like big as far as like keys. No, but like, I'm still going to pat myself on the back for that one, because, you know, trap game, I think, is labeled as game that team might look past. When I've always thought it was more about, you know, like a game that might be tougher than what you initially realized. This game looks a lot harder than maybe I think people realize heading into the season, particularly after they lost to Illinois to open up the season. So, but as far as actual keys, no, I mean, I do. I think defensively it comes down to just slow down to Adrian Martinez. And then on the offensive side of the ball, just kind of keep doing what you're doing. I agree with the negative plays. That's where Hassan Haskins is so valuable for Michigan. And Cade McNamara's ability so far to not take a sack, you know, and either make something out of nothing or make the smart play and get rid of the ball. has been really valuable. So, you know, keep doing that type of stuff. And I think Michigan has enough in the trenches on both sides to come out of there with a victory.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would mention as it's an additional key. So ESPN's Football Power Index, they do offensive, defensive, and special teams efficiencies. I actually think that they're, you know, just eye tests, particularly with the Big Ten teams I'm able to watch, I actually think they're pretty accurate. I don't know the entire formula, but Michigan is number one in the country in special teams efficiency. And I got to think they're top five, even if, you know, not just ESPN, but like other metrics. I got to think they're pretty much top five across the board. Nebraska is 128th in special teams efficiency. I mean, it has been, they aren't just struggling on special teams. I mean, it has been an absolute sore spot. You know, just the mental mistakes, the mental miscues. I'll repeat what I said last week or maybe 2 weeks ago about their punt coverage. Michigan State sent two punt returners out there. The ball went to the left. The guy on the right, you know, set up shop, pretend like he was about to field a punt. And everyone on Nebraska's punt coverage team went after that guy. The ball wasn't coming to him. And instead, the guy on the left took the ball and pretty much, I mean, he could, you and I could have scored a touchdown on that return. I mean, he could have jogged in. And so, you know, just a lot of mental miscues. And so I think if Michigan goes in and keeps the same, Jim Harbaugh always uses the phrase battle rhythm, you know, just doesn't get flustered or frustrated by the moment or the night game or avoid anything weird happening. Nebraska is a team that is struggling with the mental mistakes in a football game. So I think that's a big time key. Special teams efficiency isn't just coverage and returns. It's also kicking and punting. But I think this is a game where Michigan should really win the field position battle. And if they can avoid uncharacteristic mistakes, which so far this season they have been able to avoid those, you know, they can come out of here, you know, they can come out with a very big special teams advantage that parlays into an overall advantage. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, our over unders and our final predictions for this game. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Yeah, so our over-unders, as always, brought to us by Neil or via Azul over on our message board, which everyone is welcome to join and join the discussion there. Last week, we both went 5-for-8, which means our season total is I am 19-for-32 and you are 15-for-32. So let's start with the offense. Oh, this is an interesting storyline that maybe we haven't discussed too much of. J.J. McCarthy over under 5.5 snaps played. So not talking about passes or production, but does he get in for 6 snaps in this contest, over or under?
I'll go with the over on this one. I think they're slowly going to kind of start to work that more and more into the offense. One thing I'm interested in, it's clear they've been bringing McCarthy in to expand that zone read package to include some runs from the quarterback position. But I kind of wonder, tell me if you agree, this might be going a little, thinking a little bit too much, that Michigan is using it to set up McNamara to keep one on a big play at some point. Almost like they're making it so obvious that McCarthy's coming in to give them that dual situation that I think they're going to sneak one in with McNamara at one of these points in a big game, because it's almost become predictable at this point that he's going to hand it off in short yardage situations. I mean, he's, I don't even know if he has kept. So I almost kind of wonder if Michigan's really playing some chess here. You know, that's a little bit of an aside from the original point, but I will go over because I think Michigan's going to continue to work that in more and more. And I suspect we'll see McCarthy maybe in a little bit earlier than we did last Saturday.
Yeah. I'm going to go the over, because the other thing is if they happen to be up by three touchdowns, I'm not necessarily predicting that they will, but if they happen to be up by three touchdowns, then he's obviously playing more than six snaps. So I'm going to take the over. I think it could be the over, even if it is a close game. Clearly they were comfortable putting him in there when Michigan was up three starting the second half. I like where you're going with the read thing. I think, in my opinion, because you're not the first person to bring that up, I do think they are setting it up so that at some point Cade's going to keep. I can't help but think that they're not going to have him keep unless Michigan is trailing I think they'll have him keep against Ohio State. But I think the rest between now and then, it seems like Michigan's number one goal is to have a healthy quarterback room by the end of the season. So McCarthy is almost playing that McCaffrey role when it was Shea Patterson and Dylan McCaffrey in 2018, I suppose, where because he's the backup, they're a little bit more comfortable. And I think he is faster too, McCarthy, but they're almost more comfortable letting him keep the ball and maybe risk taking a genuine tackle at this point in the season. Cause it feels like the season's gone on for a long time, but it's only October 6th. You know, you need your starting quarterback healthy through the end of November. So plenty of season left. So that would be my assessment of it. I'm with you though. I don't know. McNamara can keep the ball. It's not out of his skill set. And so, yeah, can they successfully bait teams into maybe lulling them to sleep before he keeps it for a big play? Number two, we haven't really talked a ton about the run game the last couple of weeks, just because it hasn't been as dominant as it was the first three games of the season. 149.5 yards for Haskins and Corum. I have to assume that's rushing only. But do they get to 150 combined in this game?
I'm going to go over. I think Michigan wins the battle up front on both sides of the ball, but I do think they do enough. Offensive line does enough, I think. Kind of similar how I feel about last week. Where did they end up last week? Did they get that?
Corum and Haskins?
Yeah, close.
It was like 95 yards.
Okay. I think there's a big play in there somewhere this weekend. So I'm kind of banking on that again, but I'll say the over, I think.
Yeah, the other thing that should quietly be mentioned is, I mean, Corum clearly was taking some major hits in that game. So I think if Michigan really wanted, if they had been in an over-under situation where it was set at 150, I think they could have gotten Corum and Haskins there. I think they were running the ball fairly well. There were a lot of plays for like 0 yards or a lot of stuffs, but there were also a lot of 5 to 7 yard plays. And I think there will be a lot of those in this game. The one thing giving me pause, and I just looked this up, Kenneth Walker, Michigan State's running back, someone who, is on a lot of Heisman lists, to be honest. He only ran the ball for 61 yards on 19 carries against the Cornhuskers in an overtime victory. That's only 3.2 yards per carry. Now, Michigan's run game and offensive line and running back situation is a little different than Michigan State's. So I think I'm actually going to take the under if it's rushing specific. I do think that both of them will have good games. And I'm with you, one big play makes me wrong. I think I'm going to take the under here just because Nebraska seems, you know, I'm not overly impressed with their run defense, but 150 is just a hard one to predict in the Big Ten. I think the first three games of the season for Michigan gave us an inflated sense of what Michigan is going to do on the ground this year. And they'll still be a good ground attack, but 300 yards a game is just not, or I think it was 350 through the first 3 weeks of the season. It's just not a sustainable number. Next one, 8.5 catches for Mike Sainristeel and Cornelius Johnson. Interesting duo. I'd be curious the rationale behind picking those two, but Cornelius and Sainristeel, do they get 9 catches or more in this contest?
I'll go with the under. It seems kind of high.
It does seem kind of high.
Yeah. I have a suspicion as to why those were the two named. I'm not going to say it right now, but I'm still going to go with the under. Nothing to add there. It almost have to, like, how many catches does Sainer still have this season? A handful?
Yeah, I don't know if right? he even has. Yeah.
So I'll go with the under.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm also going to go with the under. That seems like a pretty high number, period. So far this season, Cornelius Johnson has 10 catches. Mike Sainer still has 5. So combined, they have 15 all season. So I'm going to go with the under. Number 4, 45% third down completion percentage. That seems like a high third down completion percentage. Maybe that must be consistent with what Michigan's done this season. But do they get 45% on third downs?
Oh, boy. I'll say slightly under. That's pretty high for what should be a pretty raucous road environment. It's tempting to pick the over, though, just because we talk about they've rarely put themselves in third and long, and they have a guy like Haskins who, you know, third and two, third and three can get you that a lot of times, but I'm still going to take the under by a slight margin.
Yeah, so far this season, Michigan is at 43.75, so that's a fairly consistent number. Nebraska's defense is holding the opponents to 37.25, which is actually below the nation's average, but that's still below 45. I'm going to take the under. I do think overall third and fourth down combined, and that's something we didn't unpack too much on Saturday when we recorded the postgame episode, is Michigan's starting to do a little bit of that NFL style. I mean, we're seeing more and more NFL teams going for it on fourth down. And you know, Jim Harbaugh has not been afraid of fourth downs before, but I can't help but wonder if Matt Weiss bringing a lot of analytics decision-making to this coaching staff. I can't help but wonder if they're kind of taking a page out of some of these NFL teams' playbooks and saying fourth and two, statistically speaking, based on Michigan's offensive line, based on Hassan Haskins' ability, you know, if it's third and two, just go for it twice. Maybe not the exact same play, but maybe your team can get you a few feet. And so seeing a little bit more of that, I'd be curious where Michigan's fourth down attempts ranks among teams. I mean, especially given that they've never trailed, it has been a very high number this season. All right, switching to the defense. Adrian Martinez gets 254.5 passing yards. So not rushing yards, passing yards. Does he get that much over or under 254.5?
If he goes over, I think Michigan's in trouble. I see he had 244 against Michigan State. I think they have some success for sure. Maybe more than Michigan's yielded so far this season, but I don't know if he gets that high. I think I'll go with the under.
Yeah, I think that is high. I don't know if – has anyone thrown for that much against Michigan this year? Granted, he is the best quarterback Michigan's probably faced all season, but I'm going to take the under. I think – I don't know. He'd have to hit like several 40-plus yarders, and Michigan just really hasn't allowed too many of those.
He's only thrown for that twice this season, and once was against Fordham.
Okay.
You know, and with Michigan's advantage – defensive line versus Nebraska's offensive line. It's unless they hit on a couple big plays again, which again, always a possibility, but you know, unless they do that, I don't know how he gets there. I guess
this one, I'm going back and forth on this one a little bit. Michigan allows 4.4 yards per carry in this game. Seems like a high number given what Michigan's run defense has done, but you've mentioned Martinez has had those 75 yarders or 60 yarders or 80 yarders. Do they get to 4.4 yards per carry against the Wolverines?
I'm going to stick with the under still. You know, Martinez has gotten some yards, but his per average is it's 5.2 yards per carry. And I do believe that's sack adjusted. You know, so he's in a lot of ways, I think where he's a bigger problem in the running game. Yes, he's capable of making the big play. We mentioned that earlier, but it's the broken tackles and stuff. Maybe on like a third and six, you know, type guy that you really have to account for. So, you know, I think they'll approach that number. A lot of these are very like borderline, I feel like, and this is another one. I think he'll get in the neighborhood, they'll get in the neighborhood as a unit. But I don't think they quite get there. So I'm going to go with the under.
Yeah, I'll go with the under too. I think, again, one big play kind of negates the whole thing, but I don't know. I test gut feeling under. All right. Number seven. This is where we have to get our thinking caps on. 9.5 different players on Michigan's defense get at least one havoc play. For those that don't know, a havoc play can count. I mean, it's really anything that stands out in the box score. Tackle for loss, or sack. Well, I guess they both count. Tackle for loss, pass breakup, interception, or force a fumble. Not recover a fumble, but force a fumble. So does Michigan get 10 players to record at least one havoc play in this matchup?
I'm putting my thinking cap on, but that seems high. I mean, I guess I'll go with the under. I'm trying to think of 10 guys that would. I mean, I can think of 10 guys, obviously, but it's just seems like a tall task. But I'm going to go with the under on that one. I'm going to feel like I'm playing the odds by going on the under.
So last week, 9 players got it for Michigan against Wisconsin. I'm actually tempted to take the over here. I think the thing where it becomes high is the tackles for loss. People can share tackles for loss. And then the players who are getting pass breakups are very different. I mean, it's in many cases, other than like Daxton Hill, it's generally players who aren't also getting tackles for loss. So I'm going to say over. It's bold. I'm with you, but that's a very high number. But the way Michigan rotates its players in, I think the way that they're going to be able to have success with generating negative plays, I think the frequency that Nebraska is going to pass downfield, even if guys aren't necessarily super open, I'm going to take the over on that one. Be a little bold. Number 8. Oh, I like this one. Does Michigan's season-long streak of never trailing, they're one of just 4 teams in the country, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, and BYU are the only teams that can say this. They have not trailed all season. Slight giveaway for our score predictions, I suppose, if the answer is in one of these directions. Do they avoid trailing the Cornhuskers in this matchup?
So under is that they will trail? Like, is that, I mean, I guess it doesn't,
I really think matter. We can just say one or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually do think they'll face a deficit. I think it'll be early. I think maybe Nebraska either scores on a scripted drive to early on or kicks a field goal and scores first. It's not indicative of my overall prediction, but I am going to say, I think maybe Michigan trails for the first time this season.
Yeah, I'm gonna say so too. It's kind of a tough one to predict. So many different things can happen in the first two drives, but Nebraska, I think we've maybe undersold them a little bit in this episode. I mean, according to, you know, a lot of analytics or I guess the advanced stat metrics, they're a top 25 team in terms of quality of play. You know, thinking about S and SP plus rankings, ESPN FBI, PFF. You know, they're not a slouch team. They are playing at home. And I think the one thing that makes them different than Wisconsin, they have a worse defense than Wisconsin, but they have an offense that can convert. When Wisconsin took the ball in Michigan territory to open the game with, you know, fans were really excited and everything, and they couldn't do anything with it. If Nebraska inherited the ball with that situation, I'm inclined to think they could work down the field and at least get some points. So if Michigan opens the game with a touchdown, I think we'll both end up looking wrong. I'm going to take the odds though, and think that over the course of the 60 minutes, at some point, Nebraska holds a lead, just because I do think that their offense can look really good. They can, you know, they can put something together in a hurry. Okay. Final thing for this episode, Steve, I guess your final assessment of this matchup or this game, what you think will happen, and your score prediction for Saturday night.
I do think, I got to think that Nebraska is probably the best team that Michigan's faced. I'm not, you know, Wisconsin has three losses to three. I don't know where Notre Dame ended up ranked after their loss last week, but top 15-ish, top 20 teams. You know, but either way, Nebraska does strike a little more fear on the offensive side of the ball, as we've talked about. But that being said, I go back to the trenches. I just have a hard time seeing. I could foresee a scenario. Maybe Nebraska's front seven plays Michigan strong defensively, but I look at the biggest mismatch in this game is Michigan's front against Nebraska's offensive line. And this is a game, like I said, to begin the show, Aiden, this is a game I think where Aiden Hutchinson can really just kind of continue to put his stamp on this team and what they're capable of doing. And like you said, and we talked about the recap of the Wisconsin game, Ojabo's emergence is massive for Michigan and could be the difference for them in some big games. So I just think that mismatch is going to be difficult for Nebraska to overcome. So I'm going with Michigan. I think I had it 27-20. I think Michigan covers, but I do think this is the first game all season that, well, I guess the Rutgers game sort of qualifies, I guess, now that I think about it. But this one, I think, goes down to the wire. This will be different than the Rutgers game in that I don't think Michigan jumps out to a big lead and kind of hangs on. I think this game is maybe enter the fourth quarter, not really sure what direction it's going to go.
Yeah, I agree with you. I still kind of think Wisconsin would beat Nebraska, like if they played straight up. But the thing about Nebraska is they don't have one gigantic glaring strength, but they also don't have one gigantic glaring weakness. And I think Michigan was able to benefit from, if to beat Wisconsin, all you have to do is blank. And I don't know if there's necessarily a formula like that against Nebraska. It's kind of weird to say about a team that's 3-3, but you know, we haven't, so far they've looked good at home. They haven't, you know, when they played Illinois, Michigan State, and Oklahoma, they were on the road in all of those games. Kind of, I'm with you. I just can't really convince myself that Michigan doesn't win this game in the trenches. And I think the best thing that could have happened for Michigan heading into this matchup is they found their pass rush last week. Not just the Jabo, but although obviously he played a tremendous role in that. But you know, I thought Taylor Upshaw had a couple of nice plays. Aiden Hutchinson, everyone knows about him. Mozzie Smith, quietly, three quarterback pressures. That's big. You know, Christopher Hinton, I felt like he was, I don't think he ended up with a ton of pressures, but seemed like he was getting a little bit more push. This is a game where if you can get good push against Wisconsin's offensive line, as much as they've struggled, you're going to have a good day against Nebraska's offensive line, more likely than not. So hard to see Nebraska being able to get comfortable offensively to the point, to the tune of, you know, 25 plus points. On the other side, so the question is, can Michigan just score more than the 20 to 21 that we're probably going to predict? Feels like they can. It does. Just Blake Corum can do a lot rushing the ball, catching the ball. Hassan Haskins can do a lot as well. So, yeah, feels like this will be a game. Michigan, I like the 27 to 20 score. I'll have to go in a different direction. I'll go 31 to 24. I mean, same margin, just maybe a little bit more back and forth, more high scoring. I think Michigan's advantage in the pass rush on special teams, and I think in the trenches running the ball, is going to pay off in this matchup. And so we're both predicting Michigan to enter the bye week 6-0. So that would be really something for the Wolverines if they could pull that off. I mean, given where expectations were entering the season, given how the rest of the schedule looks, you know, this is a big game. It'll be my first time at Nebraska. I'll finally have been to games at all 14 Big Ten campuses. So be sure to stay tuned for lots of coverage leading up to, during, and after the game over to MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.